How did you find us here? Particular topic you thought you'd like to hear discussed? Consciousness. Oh, that's a good subject. Krishna will explain in Bhagavad Gita. You've heard of Bhagavad Gita? Oh, really? You read it? Ah. How nice friends you have. Of course, it's not easy to find a accurate translation of Bhagavad Gita. But if you indeed were fortunate to read an accurate translation of Bhagavad Gita, you'd know what consciousness is. Krishna explains in the Gita, as it's known for sure, that consciousness is the evidence that you are spirit soul. This is why scientists cannot give a material explanation for consciousness. You know that. They try to tell you how it's an emergent property of matter. That's all just speculation. There's no proof for that. In other words, if you're actually going to understand the universe, you must admit that there's more than matter, and consciousness is your first indication of that. But in an effort to avoid spiritual knowledge, so-called intelligent people have to collapse consciousness into the material fold. Otherwise, it's very threatening. And that's what open-minded scientists are understanding today, that this thing called consciousness is really running around, unaccounted for, unexplained, and not understood. And if you properly address it, it can shake the whole Western materialistic paradigm, which is what's happening now. How can you actually present that consciousness is matter? No one can do that. All you can do is present your speculations, but there's no proof. So, according to the Vedic point of view, Vedic knowledge, of which Bhagavad Gita is a part, you have to understand that the universe is not simply composed of inanimate matter. There's also something else to the universe. And consciousness is the indicator that there is something else. What is that something else? The spiritual energy. Your own consciousness indicates to you that you have a spirit soul. Now, as I've said so many times, if you don't understand what consciousness is, how can you understand anything? And why do you think that might be so? Yes, very good, very good. All your percepts and awarenesses, so on and so forth, come to you by the grace of your consciousness. So if you don't understand your consciousness, you don't understand what's coming to you. So it's good you have a solid grasp of that. There are many scientists and professors who cannot see these basic points. The result of miseducation is that you understand everything except what you should understand. Here we discuss these things very clearly. We have no problem with these fundamentals. But you know, clear intelligence is not just an ordinary thing. Clear intelligence is a product of a clear lifestyle. Maybe not altogether in this lifetime, but due to a clear lifestyle in the previous lifetime, still there's some ability to grasp these fundamentals in this lifetime. Lifestyle is very much related to what you can understand and what you cannot understand. Did you know that? According to how you live, that determines your receptivity to spiritual knowledge. So, both on the very tiny quantum level of existence, and in the everyday world, the macro level of existence, the observer is not independent of what is observed. The state of consciousness of the observer determines what you see. That's not simply on the subatomic level, but it's also in everyday life. Now, Western knowledge accepts that, yes, on the subatomic quantum level, you know, the observer is totally bound with what he or she observes. But they don't accept that point in everyday life. Whereas Krishna in Bhagavad Gita will teach you that in everyday life, in the macro world, according to our consciousness, we will be able to understand certain things, and we will not be able to understand certain things. Bhagavad Gita will teach you how in material existence everyone is bound by the three modes of material nature, known in Sanskrit as gunas. Gunas means ropes. So these three ropes bind your consciousness. How do you get these ropes? Simply by interacting with material nature. You become contaminated. And as a result of that contamination, you become bound in a certain way. So there's a price to pay for meandering through the material world. It's not you just lollygag here and there and loiter here and there and, you know, you just wind up, you know, having a neutral learning experience. Now, just like if you meandered and lollygagged through a cholera-stricken area of a city, don't be surprised when you, you know, come out of the city, you know, infected with cholera germs. If you were traveling, doing your overseas experience, and you heard that an area you were going to was saturated with a deadly disease, you'd be very careful about going there. But we do not know what is the deadly disease of material existence. Why is that? We have desires. We have things we want fulfilled. And therefore we overlook or we blind ourselves to the actual contamination that's going on. We'll delude ourselves very easily just for the sake of the possibility of some temporary happiness. So, you notice, everyone seems to be endowed with a mission. You believe in something known as material happiness, you see the possibilities, and you trek onward. Now, why is that? Why do you believe there's such a thing as material happiness? Why do you trek onward pursuing it? And what is so honorable and laudable about pursuing it? It's like in the American Constitution. They have a phrase which they make every school kid learn, that every human being is entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Yes, you can pursue, but you ever can't. That you have to ask yourself. Why is consciousness pursuing such temporary things? Why does consciousness think it can satisfy itself with matter? You have an incompatible situation there. Once you accept that consciousness is probably not material, and I think you accept that, then the next thing you have to ask yourself, and that's got real revolutionary consequences, the next thing you have to ask yourself is, well, why do I think matter will satisfy me then if I am a conscious person? You see? Now if you start thinking deeply about that, then the floorboards under your life start to shake. And when those floorboards under your life start to shake, you should consider yourself very fortunate. And then you come see the Hare Krishnas. We like when the floorboards shake. It's a fortunate person who questions. Actually, who is it? Juliet. See, there's Juliet. She's the second young lady from a year. So, She began to question when she was 15. How old are you? 27. So she was 15. You didn't begin that early, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you did, huh? You weren't just playing rugby or something. So when she was 15, she read Bhagavad Gita. And she wrote a letter saying, I'm tired of the material world. I want to find out more about Krishna consciousness. And she was going to high school. So she would ask questions to one of her teachers about existence, the meaning of life, spiritual things. And what did her teacher tell her? The teacher said, this is all part of teenage life to ask questions about existence. But when you mature into an adult, you'll stop. You're a teenager now, therefore you're inquiring. But as you get older and reach maturity, you'll understand there's no need to question. There's no need to question. Simply work, buy, consume, and die. An intelligent person is not ready for that kind of life. Now, where do you find the association of those who actually want to use their intelligence rather than sit on it? Where do you find that kind of association? Now, mind you, it is one thing simply to speculate yourself crazy. What's the meaning of life? Could it be this? Could it be that? And it's another thing to be willing to undergo purification so that your consciousness becomes clean enough to understand high truths. You see, everything requires a qualification. If you're going to go to the university here, they want to see some preliminary qualifications. Similarly, if you want to understand transcendental subject matter, you need some preliminary qualifications. You have to have a clean lifestyle, otherwise the consciousness will not be able to understand the sublime truths. So, let's get back to consciousness again. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, Krishna says, you should know that that which pervades the body is indestructible. That is consciousness. No one is able to destroy the spirit soul, Krishna says. The consciousness is the energy of the soul. Consciousness lets you know the soul is there, just like the daylight lets you know the sun is there. You can look out the window and see it's light outside, even though you don't see the sun. Similarly, you can tell by your consciousness that you have spirit soul. You cannot dissect consciousness. You cannot put it in a box. You cannot create it. Cannot destroy it. So the consciousness is your best indicator that there is spirit soul. The spirit soul emanates consciousness and is consciousness. Now, what is the kind of consciousness that characterizes material existence? Let us try to understand the kind of consciousness that gets us into trouble. Now, did you ever wonder why it is that billions of people are satisfied simply not worrying about who they are, where they came from before birth, and where they'll go after death? Did you ever wonder? That is a particular type of consciousness, a particular type of contamination. Now, how to get beyond that contamination? There has to be purification. In other words, it's not enough just to say, I want to be good. Have you ever done that? At one point in your life, I want to be good. You've done that? Yeah, I'm going to be good. That's not enough. You have to know the techniques for becoming good. In other words, simply, a desire, although that's a good start, is not enough. You've got to actually follow through with the program that will allow you to be good. Suppose you're wandering in a cholera-affected area of Southeast Asia, you decide, I'm going to visit, Burma or Laos, no matter what anybody says, it's my ultimate overseas experience, I got to travel. And you're in this cholera-affected area, here telling everybody, I want to be healthy. I really want to be healthy. Bit of a contradiction, huh? Yes, if you really want to be healthy, then get out of the contaminated area. And what kind of precautions are you taking? Similarly, if you want to be good in the term, in the sense of consciousness, good consciousness, then you must get away from contaminating circumstances, and you must adopt proper techniques for guarding your consciousness. So Krishna consciousness teaches you all that. Now, we should bear one thing in mind. We are spirit soul, and we are conscious. You are conscious of what goes on in your body. If someone pinches your hand, you'll, because of your consciousness, be aware of it. But if someone, this is Bart here, he's from the Netherlands, if someone pinches Bart's hand, will you be directly aware of it? No. Why is that? Yes. But what are you actually saying in an indirect way when you say, I'm not him? Yes. Go on. And what does that actually mean? Yes. Go on. Yeah, yeah. You're saying that you are limited. Although you're conscious, you're limited. Now, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita explains that you, as the spirit soul, are the knower of your body. But there is another knower who knows what's going on in everyone's body. That is the supreme consciousness. So you must recognize two types of consciousness. One, the individual consciousness, and two, the supreme consciousness. It is a big mistake to equate them. They are equal in quality, just like the spark has the same quality as the fire. But they are different in quantity. Just like the spark doesn't... You can shut the door. The spark doesn't have the quantity of the fire. The burning ability isn't the same. Sometimes people have problems with this point. You'll meet many quasi or so-called spiritual teachers who try to tell you that there's no difference between the individual soul and the supreme soul, the individual consciousness and the supreme consciousness. Nothing could be further from the truth. And you can practically understand that. If you were the all-pervading supreme consciousness, how come you don't feel it? You're not directly aware of it when someone pinches him. Because you're limited consciousness. But the supreme consciousness is aware of what goes on in everyone's body. Krishna is present in everyone's heart and in every atom. So therefore, directly and indirectly, Krishna knows what goes on with everyone and everything. That is the power of supreme consciousness. Now, you shouldn't think that that's far-fetched. Just think about the power of limited consciousness. There is something you can't see or chemically analyze or mathematically analyze which is responsible for your basic awareness. That everyday miracle you're living with, yes? So why is it such a big step to go from there to understand that there is a supreme consciousness that you cannot materially analyze? In this way, Krishna consciousness is very easy to approach. The more people talk about consciousness, the more they should become concerned about Krishna. Now, Krishna has all attractive consciousness. In other words, the qualities of Krishna attract the limited consciousness. Krishna is all consciousness. Krishna has no material body. So, the quality of Krishna's conscious existence attracts all the limited conscious entities. You like to be attracted. Everyone likes to be attracted to something. Now, what is the source of all attractiveness? That is the consciousness of Krishna. Our actually, Krishna is consciousness. So we can't really say the consciousness of Krishna. It's not like inside Krishna there's some consciousness. No. Krishna is unlimited pure consciousness with form. A lot of times we think that if something is unlimited, it can't have form. Just like in our case, we are persons, but it's obvious we are limited. So, in approaching the Supreme Absolute Truth, we can think that because I have form as an individual person, and I'm limited, therefore, the unlimited must have no form, no individuality. You've heard people say like that? It's complete speculation. It's the use of material intelligence that, because I'm familiar with this, then spiritual should be the opposite. Now, spiritual has nothing to do with what you're familiar with or the opposite. The transcendental is beyond material conception. Then again, if you're smart, by looking around and seeing what's going on in the material world, you can understand the spiritual world. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, parastasmat tu bhavanyo. There's another world that is transcendental to this world of manifested and unmanifested matter. When all in this world is annihilated, in that other world, in that spiritual world, everything remains. So, what people are striving for in this world gives you a very good indication of what's there in the spiritual world, if you know what to look for. That's why you have this hankering for fulfilling happiness, lasting happiness. Haven't some of you wondered why you're looking for lasting happiness in a temporary world? Many people go, you know, they go nuts because they can't handle that point. They think it's totally crazy. They become neurotic about it. Why am I looking for lasting happiness amidst temporariness? This is crazy. They just can't handle it. How do most people resolve the contradiction? By getting intoxicated. That's why you can't have a party, you can't enjoy without intoxication. The intoxication is meant to resolve the basic contradiction that I'm looking for lasting happiness in a world that's temporary. What am I going to do about that? I'll just get intoxicated and then I can not have to deal with it. But as soon as the intoxication wears off, then you're back to the same problem. How can I have fulfilling, lasting happiness in a temporary world? Why is it that the consciousness has this yearning for happiness without end? Is it some trick of evolution that you develop this crazy desire for unending happiness, even though your existence will end? Now, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that you have a longing for lasting happiness because that is your spiritual constitutional position as part of Krishna. You actually are meant for the realm where there is no limitation to happiness. But because of a mistake in consciousness, you are in the material world now, and trying to satisfy your consciousness with matter. That's something that will never happen. If you can just understand this point, you'll save yourself so much trouble. I am consciousness. How can I satisfy myself with matter? I don't watch the movies on the airplane, but yeah, sometimes when I'm walking down the aisle or something, you know, you get a glimpse of it. And, you know, how movies are these days. They're just full of all sorts of scenes meant to agitate the audience, agitate their consciousness. So, just out of the corner of my eye, I happen to look at the screen, and there was this guy, and his dream had come true. He was close, you know, with the girl of his who he was pursuing. He had her in his arms, and she was complying, and it was all just happening. So, I just saw a few seconds of it. I'm just explaining the background of it to you. He started kissing her leg, and he was in total ecstasy, up and down her leg, and then just to relish it even more, he began to pull her leg, and the leg came out. And there he was holding her leg. And he realized it was artificial limb. And she's there looking horrified. You know my secret. Yeah. So she jumps up and you know. tries to get to the bathroom, holding onto the wall, and she's crying in the bathroom and and he's holding the leg, So what does he do then? He's holding this artificial leg. It's like artificial from here down. And so he takes it, and she's inside the bathroom crying. And so he starts knocking on the door with the toes of the artificial, and she's freaking out inside the bathroom. So then, of course, finally she comes out of the bathroom and crying and, tells her story. I didn't want to tell you that, I had this car accident and now I thought you'd reject me. And of course, he says, oh, no, I would never reject you. And this and that. Meanwhile, he's still holding the artificial leg. So just think, one minute he's in ecstasy, he's kissing up and down this leg. And, Why did he change? It's whether it's artificial or not, it's just matter. So why should there be some hang up? But it wasn't real skin that he thought. It was an artificial limb. But now both are matter. So this is how we try to please ourselves in this world. By different arrangements of matter. Some arrangements of matter we'll call very pleasing. And other arrangements of matter we'll call not pleasing. But if you're smart, you'll think, whether it's so-called pleasing or not, why should I, as consciousness, be trying to be satisfied with that? So do you think you're willing to ask yourself those kind of questions? Yes, yes, very good. So Bhagavad Gita is the classic handbook on how to extricate your consciousness from material entanglement. Have you ever read a manual for doing that? Well, that is what Bhagavad Gita is for. The song of the most opulent one. Krishna is the most opulent one because his consciousness attracts everyone and everything. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that if you follow the proper method, you can purify your consciousness so that you can actually understand the spiritual reality. I know so many people here, you've heard people use that word spirituality so many times, and they're speculating about what is spiritual truth, but you never see any difference in their lifestyle, therefore you don't become inspired to really look into what they're doing. But if you actually listen to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita and put into action what Krishna says, you will see the result. Now, it's very popular buzzword that people say, I'm doing kind of like a Buddhist meditation, vipassana, meditating on the breath, and you heard that kind of thing before, right? The whole point is, they say, how to reduce your desires. You've heard that, right? Now, do you think it's possible to reduce desire? Right, because what happens? What Have you tried it? Have you ever tried reducing desire? Like to say, okay, this weekend I'm just not going to do what I did the other weekends. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will explain that you cannot exterminate desire. Simply you have to know how to desire perfectly. So Krishna consciousness means how to have perfect desire. How to burn with perfect desire. It's the imperfect or impure desires that give us trouble when we burn with them. But you can learn how to burn with perfect desire. Because consciousness always has desires. Now, what is the best desire? That you should try to understand. What is the best desire? You ever thought about that? Any, come up with any hunches? To understand things. But as we discussed earlier, you cannot understand properly unless you've paid the price to distill your consciousness. Different levels of consciousness allow you to understand different things. So how to understand the highest things? Your consciousness must come to the highest level. Most people these days have a hard time understanding they're not the body due to impure consciousness. And that's just the beginning to understanding not the body. Beyond that, beyond understanding your spiritual identity, you need to understand the identity of the Supreme Soul and the relationship between the individual soul and the Supreme Soul, Krishna. This knowledge is necessary for every human being to function properly. Otherwise, we're just meandering through material existence and we're picking up so many contaminations. But we think, oh, I'm learning, I'm living, I'm growing. It's not happening like that. You're actually picking up residues, whatever you do. It's not that you can live, for example, in such an intensely materialistic society and culture that we have now and not accumulate pollution. I'm not talking about smog or water pollution. I'm talking about the pollution of consciousness. This is where our real environmental efforts should be focused. Yes, we should have clean air. Yes, we should have clean water. But the real ecologist recognizes that the most deadly pollution is that of consciousness. What pollutes consciousness? This is what we should be interested to find out. Then you should ask yourself, what is my consciousness doing in such polluting circumstances? Was there a time when I had pure consciousness? And can there be that time again? And, most importantly, what do I do as pure consciousness? How many of you have given thought to that? You ever thought about that, Tracy? In a state of pure consciousness, what goes on? Unless you know, you're not going to strive for it. You'll cling to the impure activities of this world. While theoretically, talking about your consciousness, spirituality, personal development. But what actually goes on is the same old, same old. But when you become aware of the activities of the spirit soul in perfection, then you see where you should be going. You become motivated when you know something is better to be had. But if you don't know, then you won't strive. You see, most people have a hard time admitting or wrapping their minds around the fact that there could be something much better to be doing than what they're doing. I mean, when people think of ultimate happiness, what do they think of? Whatever they see in the movies, that's what they think of. They have no proper vision of the activities of pure consciousness. This is the highest knowledge of Krishna consciousness. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna calls it the most confidential knowledge. The most confidential knowledge is not simply knowing your spirit soul. The most confidential knowledge is knowing what the spirit soul does in perfection, in its pure state. In short, what does it do? It renders service to the Supreme Soul. Krishna has pure senses, and in your pure state, you have pure senses. Pure senses means that they simply exist for gratifying Krishna and nothing else. In our material rebellious state of life, we think our senses are our instruments for achieving our needs. Isn't that the way it is? It's my eyes, my ears, my skin. What are they going to do for me? You look around for potentials and opportunities for giving you pleasure the moment you wake up. Isn't that what happens? The moment your eyes wake up, your eyes open with your head on the pillow, and gradually you realize I'm awake. First thing that comes to your mind is, what's coming into my field of vision that could give me pleasure? If there's nothing around you, then the mind starts making plans. What's going to happen today for my pleasure? That is the diseased condition of life. When you're walking down the street, let's say you're walking down Courtney Place, your nose starts to itch. Is there anything here for my pleasure? Your tongue starts to salivate. Is there something to taste that will be good for me? Your skin starts to burn. I'm yearning for favorable sensations for my skin. Is there someone around? This is how people are being raised. Now, the Vedic literature is quite frank about this kind of culture. It says that when these kind of things happen, then people are being raised simply to be cats and dogs. You ever see when the dogs and cats, they're prowling around? They're looking for things for their senses. And human beings are acting the same way, misusing their valuable consciousness. So Krishna consciousness means that the topmost pleasure is composed of consciousness. And Krishna is the source of all attraction. Therefore, our consciousness should be dovetailed or connected to Krishna. Now, what do we do with all the matter? That's an important point. What to do with the matter? I've been talking about consciousness all this time and deriding attempts to get pleasure from matter. So what do we do with the matter? What do you think? Let it go? I should just take this microphone in. Let it go. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, which I sincerely hope you'll read, Krishna explains that you should use the matter for his pleasure, because it's his energy. Even though it's his inferior energy, it's his. Yes, indeed, there is a superior spiritual energy, which is you, spirit soul. But the inferior energy is also belonging to Krishna, so you should use the matter for the satisfaction of Krishna. I'm speaking in this microphone just for Krishna's pleasure. This microphone has a perfectly spiritual use. It's only used to give pleasure to Krishna. Your body, my body, is also matter. But if it's only used to give pleasure to the Supreme Consciousness, to Krishna, then that is the perfection of the body of matter. You see? In Sanskrit, this is called yukta vairagya, real renunciation. Real renunciation doesn't mean just to reject all the matter around you. It's all illusion, it's all false. No. Real renunciation means to use all the matter in the service of the source of the matter. There was a famous picture of a so-called spiritual teacher from India, and there was a pile of gold, and the picture showed him going like this. Now, ordinarily, you'd think, oh, that's a real saint, right? Why? So by him just, in other words, he's showing his, no, I will not touch it, this illusion. I will not become overwhelmed by this illusion of wealth. So you think that's very noble, huh? What about for you? And what would you do with it? Well, the Krishna conscious person will also take the gold. Yeah. Surprised, huh? Yes, if they would make a picture of us, they would show us the gold there, we'd be... Now, why is that? What kind of spiritualist are we? What do you think, Ra? Well, what's the difference? He says he's going to take it all and spend it, and I say the Krishna conscious person will take it all, but what's going on that might be different, if at all? Oh, okay, not just take it in the name of the Lord and use it for me. Yes. Use the property for the pleasure of whom it belongs to. Common example given. So many of our practitioners here can tell you this example. You're walking along the street and you see, you know, a stack of bills with a rubber band around just, you know, lying in the gutter. Now, you got three choices. What do you think those three choices are? Take them, but not. What does that mean? Daniel, what does it mean, take them, but not? No. The one who would just take them, that's the materialist. Ah, for me, my pleasure. And the one who would not take them and just keep walking, that's the impersonalist metaphysical scholar. Oh no, it's all illusion. I have nothing to do with it. But the Krishna conscious person takes it but doesn't take it, in that the Krishna conscious person picks it up and says, let me return it to its owner. Ah. You never thought about that, returning it to its owner, did you? Haven't you wondered while wandering through this world, who do all these resources belong to? Do you ever wonder about that? If you are driving on the highway at night and on the side of the road, the highway construction team has left its equipment there, do you just think it's there for you to use? No, you know, it belongs to somebody, even though they've gone home. Similarly, the resources of this world, who do they belong to? Why should we just wander through this world thinking it's just there for us and never inquire as to who the proprietor is? Inquiring who the proprietor is means inquiring how does the proprietor want the resources used. That is Krishna consciousness. Everything belongs to Krishna. How does Krishna want things used for his pleasure? And materialistic consciousness means everything belongs to me and how do I want it used for me? You see the difference? Now, how are you going to find out more about this Krishna so that you'll actually be wanting to live a Krishna conscious lifestyle? You find out more about Krishna by following Krishna's instructions, how to get to know him. What's wrong with getting to know the source of all attractiveness, the source of all pleasure? Just think if I said to you, you know, tonight I'm going to... introduce you to the source of all pleasure. Ordinarily, what would you say? Yeah, that's how you're talking. And then I said, well, you know, the source of all pleasure, that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What would you say then? But if I said to you, tonight I'm going to introduce you to the source of all pleasure, and her name is... Yeah! Right? So this shows where our consciousness is at. We cannot conceive with our impure consciousness that the Supreme is all attractive. You know, people actually think God is boring. Yeah, right? I mean, when you're going to have a good time, you're looking for pleasure, you never think about the Supreme, right? Right? It's like this is Jen here. Now, Jen, I mean, most of your friends would never believe that here you were pursuing the Supreme pleasure in the Supreme. They would just, like, they don't have any even theoretical conception of that. Just catch our bias, catch our prejudice. Why do we think that, though? We have no reason to, but we're so sure. Pleasure in the Supreme, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just imagine, you have some friends, right, besides Dave, right? Imagine going to your family. Imagine going to family or friends and, family reunion, you know. Hi, folks, friends. Yeah, others would just be maybe polite about it, but, you know, they would just... Yeah, all right. Yeah. I hear you. Right. Mm. But if you went and told that same group of family and friends, I'm into the greatest pleasure that's available. I've discovered hang gliding. Oh, man. Whoa. That's interesting. You see how the bias of society is there? For no reason at all. You see, people are not getting real pleasure from what they're doing, but their pride prevents them from admitting it. Whenever you're around family and friends, it's like, how you doing? Oh, I am, all right, yeah. How about you? Yeah. Right? It's just like a reflex action, you know? Yeah, I'm all right, yeah, it's going on okay, yeah. Or as they say in Tasmania, where's Madre here? A Tassie told me this is what they say in Tasmania. Let's see if I can get it right when someone asks, how you doing? Ah, no need to complain, and it wouldn't do any good if I complained anyway. Is that a Tassie answer? You haven't heard that one, huh? All right. Huh? What do you call them over there? You don't call them mates, you call them cobbers. Right? Hey, cobber, how you doing? Nah, not too bad. I mean, no need to complain. Wouldn't do any good anyway. So, if you're smart, you'll see that there's a big conspiracy going on. No one is getting what they want, but they'll never admit it. Even your mother and father won't tell you this. Now, did your mother and father ever sit you down and say, son, we'd like to tell you something that we really haven't admitted for any of your 25 or so years of existence? You know, the actual truth is, this pursuit of happiness is not worth it. There's really no happiness there. And as our son, we wanted you to know that before you wasted any more years of your life. Has anyone had a parent who said like that? Now, what kind of society is it then that we have if you don't have any parents who say who will tell you the truth? Instead, what do they tell you? Yeah, get a job. And, yeah, of course. Get some money, yeah. Buy a house, yeah. Have some kids, whether you're married or not, have some kids, right? Yeah. What else? Keep working, yes. And what's the purpose of it all? Good retirement. So in this way, you can see the cheating that's going on. Your most dear friends, family members, won't tell you the truth. Isn't that shocking? Make this test, if you dare. One time when you're with your best family members, or friends, or beloved, ask, your parents. This would be especially good for your parents. Ask them, can you really tell me? Is it really worth it? I mean, are you really satisfied and happy? And what is your future going to be? And try to get a real answer out of them. Very difficult. What do you think your future will be? Where do you think you're headed? Ask that question. And you'll see the uncomfortable factor rapidly, increase. Like, looks on. I think we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Life's been sort of good for your mother and I, and yes, there've been bad times, but look, son, if it wasn't for us, you wouldn't be here. This is something like that. And look, we're just doing the best we can. And we've done our best to provide you with a good future. No one knows all the answers, son. It's just not possible. So what we've tried to do for you and your brothers and sisters is just provide the basics for a life with dignity. We've tried to provide the basis in which you'd be good, clean kids. You still do brush your teeth every morning, though. So, and to our knowledge, none of you have been using drugs. That's true, isn't it? And to I, and and we had asked that whoever you're living with, you bring them by to introduce that person to us, and you've done that, you know. We have noticed over the years that our sons and daughters have stuck with the same partner for, more than 2 months, and we're quite pleased about that. I mean, other families don't even meet the partners of their kids, but we met them all, It's quite a task keeping up with them all, but all the changes. But we have met them, and we are thankful for that. In our family, we've tried to be practical. When we found out that your 15-year-old sister was, involved with a young man, we simply asked her, just bring him home and live with him. Why hide it? That's we're all one big family. That's all you'll hear from parents today. They have no idea what's going on. Just like, let's say, in an unenlightened, unknowledgeable state, you decided to be a parent. Well, what could you tell the kid? But you don't think like that. You just think, I want a kid. That's what the ladies think. I want a kid. Generally, the men don't want kids. The men, they just like to hang out with their mates and play rugby. But then, sooner or later, the ladies start saying, look, we don't have any kids. There's going to be a problem with this relationship. And the guys don't. He doesn't want to hear that because that means his sense gratification is affected. Kids. Yeah, sure. So, no one really thinks that. Why should I have a child if I have no knowledge of reality to give to the child? No one thinks that. They just think, it'd be nice to have a little kid in the house. Yeah. Finally, when the guy gets over his shock, he's thinking, well, you know, actually the kid will look like me, and it'll be a chip off the old block, and yeah, well, you know, why not? No one thinks, according to the standard of Vedic knowledge, why should I have a child if I cannot rescue that child from the clutches of birth and death? That's the real standard of birth control. Real birth control means don't bring a kid into the world unless you can guarantee that you can rescue that kid from the cycle of repeated birth and death. So how does that sound, Ra? That is there in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita. Namo chayadyat samapechamitram, Sanskrit. Don't have a kid unless you can save the kid from repeated birth and death. And if you can save the kid from repeated birth and death, then you can have a child. Otherwise, don't. So much to real knowledge and culture we're not aware of. So this Krishna consciousness is an attempt to bring, first of all, humanity to the so-called human beings, and also to bring them transcendental knowledge and lifestyle. Krishna consciousness is doing two inconceivable things at once. It's making people into real human beings, which is not a spiritual thing, but you have to be a real human being to understand transcendental knowledge. And the second thing is taking them to the transcendental platform. As long as people are engaged in unrestricted sexual relations, gambling, meat eating, and intoxication, they're not even in the human category. That accounts for all the visible problems, you see. But beyond that, once you become a human being, by kicking out those activities, then you have to go to the transcendental platform. Purify your consciousness so that you can understand the supreme consciousness, Krishna. All right? Any questions? Well, thank you all for listening very attentively. All right, we're going to do a little chanting. Then we'll have our banquet. Okay, we can just stand up and relax our limbs.